Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change. So today for Goals Question Time, I am speaking over WeChat to Tal Bhatt, who is at Tsinghua X Lab, and she's Director of Business Development and Head of the IP Center in Beijing, China. Hi, Tal.
Hi, Andrew. Good talking to you.
Thanks very much. Very good to have you on the line through WeChat. Could you give us a brief introduction to yourself first on that, please?
Yes, so I have to say it's very befitting that we're using WeChat since it's, you know, the dominating tech here in China and potentially globally later on. So a little bit about myself. I come from Israel, born and raised there, and I've actually worked in Israel for some years in law. I worked as an IP attorney, and that brought me to working with a lot of high-tech and startup companies, and I figured that pure law was not kind of my forte, and I really enjoyed the interplay between business and innovation. And that actually brought me to China about 7 years ago, where I got my MBA at Tsinghua University. And when I graduated, I just heard of XLab, so it was really just the beginning of basically this innovation entrepreneurship platform for Tsinghua University, and I decided to join the core team, and I've been working with them for the past 4.5, almost 5 years now.
Great. And for the listeners, yes, could you introduce Tsinghua University, please, and
yes,
because of its global position, which a lot of organizations and individuals might not have heard about?
Yes, so Tsinghua is basically the equivalent of MIT, so it's very engineering and tech focused. It's actually ranked number one in China and actually globally from, I just saw a 2018 university ranking that ranked it number one in computer science and engineering. Actually overtaking MIT. So the university has been around for some time now, and I'm sure they're super stoked about it. And so Tsinghua is very much focused on engineering and hard sciences, but also has quite a few schools doing liberal arts. So it's a very interesting place to bring together people from different disciplines. And I think that's what stands at the core of XLab.
And XLab, then, could you describe what XLab does and why that's been set up?
So what happened is that Tsinghua really has been the number one university in China, especially in kind of the hard sciences. And we had people that really stuck to their own in their own vertical. So people from med school talking to other people from med school, and there really wasn't a lot of mixing around with people from different backgrounds. And the idea is that we're trying to change that by opening up these verticals. And we created XLab. So it's basically, it's an innovation platform. So we don't call ourselves an incubator per se, even though we do incubate teams, is because it's much more comprehensive. And the target is to really facilitate and cultivate startups and bring people together from different disciplines. And I think what makes it really special is a unique approach to entrepreneurship. So we're not sector specific. We really believe that innovation can come from anywhere and everywhere. There's no ageism. We really work with you know, whether it's undergrads, master, PhD, most of them are master and PhD students, but a really big alumni group as well. And we really don't care if you've graduated, you know, 5 years ago or 20 years ago. We really value people with industry experience, and it makes it a very interesting, dynamic place where people with a lot of different backgrounds come together. And so the idea is that we really cater to early stage startups, and we try to provide whatever we can in support services and resources, both from industry, bringing mentors, access to capital, of course, consultancy, specific sectors. Ever since we started about 4.5 years ago, right now we stand at a little over 1,190 project teams that we're nurturing today, most of them are still active. About 485 are already incorporated, just to give you an estimate, a gauge of where we are right now. And about 150 of those raised, I think, over $375 million. So you can appreciate that most of them are early stage startups, but we've got a growing number of startups that are in growth stage already, and talking about A, B, C round. So this is kind of just to give you a general overview where we are right now. It's a very exciting place to be.
Yeah, no, an excellent introduction to the ecosystem there in China. So, and from your introduction coming from Israel, could we start first by exploring the ecosystem, maybe comparing what you're seeing in China now compared to other locations, you know, Israel and the US?
Sure. So I think the let me first just start by saying that I think the innovation hub in China is and always has been Beijing. So a lot of people are surprised to hear it, but it really has become number one innovation in China because it brings together people from all backgrounds. So it's not sector specific, it's become a real drawing stone for people with really interesting backgrounds. To compare with Israel, so innovation ecosystem has grown much more organically, I'd say. So because it's such a small country, people don't have as much problem getting to know one another. There's also the military service that brings people together. I'm sure you've heard of people from A200, which is a really elite military unit that really educates and people skilled in everything to do with computer science and cybersecurity. So this is kind of China is far different in the sense that starting 2014, the government pretty much said we want to try to become a higher value based economy. And so they really started diverting a lot of funding, a lot of resources to building the ecosystem up. EXA, by the way, started a year earlier. So we're ahead of the curve on that front. Mm-hmm. And so the view to entrepreneurship is different. In Israel, it would be much more organic and solution-oriented, I'd say, whereas you'd find more I think maybe lifestyle-oriented in the Bay Area in the United States, so everything to do with companies like Twitter or Instagram. In Israel, you see that the industries are much more solution-based focused. So you've got, you know, agri-tech, you've got cybersecurity, you've got some biotech, automotive is picking up in recent years. And it's all stemming from the fact that it's, you know, started out as a country with a lot of problems and really not a whole lot of anything else. And so you really needed to solve these problems, and it's very much shaped the entrepreneurial mindset of Israelis. Chinese, I feel, are somewhere in the middle. So I think it's geared towards a quick, super strong, super aggressive commercialization. But there's also a lot of very serious scientists and researchers out there. So you kind of get everything in China. And being such a huge market, it's not surprising. Uh-huh. Does that clarify it a bit?
Yeah, no, that's a great comparison in the different nuances between the locations. Let's address the comment that's often made to me, or we sort of still see around, that China just copy products and software and that from the West. You know, do you believe this is true? And the sector, is it changing?
I believe the sector is changing significantly and drastically. So in the past decade, I'd say that China's IP environment has matured, you know, really made leaps and bounds in my personal view. It's an imperfect system like everywhere else, so I'm sure that you'll be able to, you know, find people saying otherwise, but at least in, you know, tier one, tier two cities, you'd see that the situation has changed significantly. You have a professional IP courts now with professional, you know, judges. You can see that in terms of damages, you know, and decisions in favor of foreign companies operating in China for IP infringements and other violations. So I think, and of course China itself becoming a higher value economy, meaning that it's becoming more innovative, it has to comply with the international IP treaties, I think. So in order for others to basically protect, you know, their own inventions, they have to comply and offer the same terms and conditions, you know, within mainland China. So as I said, it's an imperfect system, but I really feel that it's going in the right direction. And I share this view with Ian Harvey. So he chairs the X-Labs IP Center, the International Advisory Board. And we both work together. And it's been an uphill struggle to try to tell people, listen, you may have been right in the past, but things are really changing rapidly here. And you have to give it another look and understand that it's not what it used to be. And at the same time, there's other barriers and other obstacles, of course, that you need to take into consideration.
I know Ian very well. He's on the advisory board of my business, AIMAVAR, and certainly he wrote a good paper 2 or 3 years ago now, which really highlighted that fact of how IP landscape is changing in China, and Western companies need to change their perspectives and that on it, because as you said, the infrastructure and approach now is in some cases he argues is more advanced than the West in terms of some of the litigation and that, and cost and time it takes in the US compared to China is much better. How are you seeing the sort of tech and investments sort of changing in China in terms of the types of startups and the types of things you're seeing coming through X-Lab? As you've outlined, you've now got quite a number and portfolio of businesses that have been invested in. Can you give us some examples there of the tech and investments happening there?
Well, I'd say that I think we've got a lot of IT and ICT going on. So I think in my own opinion, I think China is really the most aggressive, fast-paced market, especially for software. People here are super early adopters, and that just makes everything, to do with software, new apps, or all kinds of new either online or mobile solutions, you know, that much more relevant, first of all, but also they need to pick up the speed. So I think it really is the most cutthroat market globally for software. So we have a lot of startups, doing this, but I actually would like to give an example because Tsinghua is really so strong in everything to do with engineering. We have quite a few teams doing robotics, quite a few teams doing new materials, for example. One of these teams is a startup that is, it's a spin-off company. They're working with their professor and they're basically commercializing the research, and they're creating a bioplastic which disintegrates within 3 months. And it's a very exciting technology. Applications for it is staggering, everything to do with packaging to agriculture sheets. The special thing about these guys working on it, and they've been at it for about a couple years now, is that they've created this special process that you're using seawater, fermentating it, and actually you can create this PHA material, and that is the material that you integrate to create the bioplastic. The special thing about it is that up to now, the major constraint with bioplastics is that the fermentation used fresh water, and that they really are now attempting to use seawater with higher salinity, and I think that's a major obstacle. Mm-hmm. So they're doing really exciting work, but these guys have had really a hard time reaching to a point right now that they're in the process of testing out new applications to this technology and thinking about basically creating a whole portfolio of bioplastic solutions that they can then license out the tech to other companies. Because it's a spin-off company, they've had a really hard time in getting it off the ground. And just to give an example, so what happens in China, specifically in Tsinghua, but I assume in other universities that would be a similar situation, is that the professors have majority of the power to decide whether to commercialize a certain technology or not. And at this point where the students came up to their professor, you know, it was basically a little bit of a conflict of interest. So they're both PhD students, but they also want to start this company, and they're really at this guy's mercy to decide what, you know, what to do, when to do it, for both studies and for commercializing the.
Yeah.
But this conflict of interest, they came to a standstill where they created this company and they're in capital, but they're really doing all the work and they really weren't able.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, the line down. They were doing all the work, but they weren't really able to clearly articulate right from the very beginning, you know, the shareholdings for the company and what would make sense for everyone. And it took them about a year where they had to negotiate and talk with the professor to kind of figure it out. And it was a year, just a wasted year, where this technology didn't go anywhere, where, you know, investors really didn't want to go into this investment as a priority. And we worked with them at XLab and helped kind of to untie this big mess. So right now they're doing very well. They actually received international attention also from a UK-based PE called Future Planet Capital. And so it's just one example of the way that different tech commercialization processes, which is significantly different in China than in other places, can really hinder amazing technology.
Yeah. Well, I think that doesn't sound too unusual, actually, from what I've seen also out of Cambridge, England, and what I've seen out of the US in terms of those personalities and people and deciding on equity and things of those sorts.
I'd say that giving the professors, you know, about a 70% stake in deciding where and if to do something, that would be the game-changing kind of, just power the university grants professors. And it's handled, you know, not by professionals, but by people who are either very entrepreneurial and more prone towards risk-taking, or people who are not. So yeah. I think that there's a lot to be said in changing the system and bringing really good people to develop really interesting technologies later on.
But more generally, I found in other universities in China that I've visited as well. So one example, I visited Hangzhou. And speaking to the professors there, that I found that the Chinese approach about sort of saying, okay, we're going to spend one third of our time teaching, one third of our time doing research, one third of our time doing sort of industrial connections, either doing startups or working with corporates on problems. I found generally that China is sort of more open to that, maybe because it's a greener field site than what I've seen in some of the Western countries and that at the moment. So I think that integration I found has been stronger and faster in China than what we've seen in the West, maybe. So
you're right to an extent, although I'd say there's still a lot of deep set issues within the system, because from a government perspective, yes, there are definitely incentives and they're really trying to encourage commercialization within and outside, of course, universities, include professors, mm-hmm. you know, in these initiatives as well. But when you look at the steps that they're taking to try to reach this goal, you see that patents are viewed as patent applications, mind you, not even patents granted, are as viewed as way for, first of all, for professors to reach their KPI.
Right.
So every year they are measured on how many patent applications they filed. And it's also a source for subsidies, government subsidies for both professors and startups.
Okay.
And so there's a very big issue of quality versus quantity, and whether these patents, you know, sometimes they just let them lapse even, because it is just an instrument to get additional sponsorship and financial support from the government. So I'm not sure. I think in the long run, you see definitely a positive move in the direction, but there's still, I think, a lot of hiccups along the way in the tactics of it all.
Okay, good. So taking almost a step back, in my book, Purpose to Performance, Innovative New Value Chains, I see the Chinese tech companies that they could be coming out to dominate particular sort of sectors or areas, is what I term sort of enter the dragon. Now, which sort of sectors do you think China is now moving ahead with that they could become dominant in?
I think they already are, and if I'm wrong, they're well on their way to dominating, I'd say two. So everything to do with AI, I think that they're really, you know, I think right now, I think at the top, everything to do, let me see, robotics would be that, I'd say. I'm sorry, Andrew, hang on a second. What were we saying? So we had talked about it before.
Artificial intelligence we discussed before, quantum computing.
Yes, quantum computing.
And certainly from the perspective of seeing with the likes of, WeChat and Baidu and, Alibaba, the masses of quantity and the concentration of those areas, I could see would really end up bringing those, providing the platform and the data to be able to take those types of, to take those areas forward.
Exactly. So I'd say everything to do with so you link everything together, basically, you know. So you need the AI to analyze the massive quantities of data. So everything to do also with data analytics, aggregation, and then analysis, and trying to analyze trends, whether it's for consumption or everything else, including, of course, you start hearing more and more about facial recognition softwares that they're integrating to everything. So I think these are areas that they're putting a lot of effort and resources into it. And I think they're right now already dominating AI and quantum computing. So ability to really deal with mass quantities of data and trying to find patterns within it. I think that China is definitely has already taken the lead, in my opinion. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
Yeah, and I've also seen, as you touched on there, sort of robotics. So I was running a program about 2 years ago in Minhang District, which is in the west of Shanghai. And we had the governor of Shanghai, of that district and that there with us, and he was outlining about how they were going to be building in 2016, they were going to be building 25 smart robot factories in his small district in the west of Shanghai. And, you know, we're seeing these areas of concentration in things like drone manufacturing and all that as well now, where China is dominating those areas. And as you said, these things are all connected, because for a drone to be able to work smartly, then you need AI and you need data and all those things, which again, they're moving with.
And the
other aspect I raise and what I talk about now is what I term innovative new value chains, of how we're going to connect new technologies and startups to create different business models, be that things in digital health, cloud data, you know, autonomous vehicles. So in terms of, you know, with XLab, are you seeing now that your startups are going to be fitting into these new business models and these new value chains?
For sure. So I think the whole value proposition that XLab offers is, you know, bringing people in from different disciplines. So they each come with a different viewpoint about how to approach problems and, you know, what you can do to alleviate some of the issues we deal with, whether in daily life or something more significant. We have quite a few startups that are doing digital health. remote connectivity devices, everything to do with thinking about, you can tie it in, for example, automotive. So you have infotainment system analyzing, you know, your wants and preferences. At the same time, it's analyzing, you know, your heart rate and pulse and breathing, and trying to, you know, send information to, you know, your insurance company saying, you know, what was, you know, your role in, you know, this or that accident, or how we should translate to your policy. So I think this is very much the way that Chinese entrepreneurs approach it. First of all, because it's encouraged, and it's much easier, I think, with just huge quantities of data from a lot of multiple sources, including some issues that the government is interested to solve or try to alleviate some of the problems. And so they're putting this data available to people, and it's just a matter of trying to tap into it and see what you can do with it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's not as easy as, you know, just, you know, saying, I want to do A, B, C, D. But I think having central government, it helps to a certain extent, and it helps, you know, certain policies put in place for that. And I think XLab is becoming very much a base to having people solve these issues and bring about all kinds of, you know, as you basically call it, innovative new value chains, approaching things that you haven't seen before. And I uh-huh. think that makes it very interesting to watch and support, of course.
And are you seeing global corporates now coming to connect with that sort of ecosystem? Have you got examples there from XLab?
Yes, of course. We have worked with a lot of international companies. XLab, because we're a nonprofit, we're very much reliant on our collaboration with industry. So we make it to be very much on point with what's going on. We worked before with automotive, for example, Audi and Volkswagen. Whether it's just Volkswagen, we had a hackathon with them. So they wanted to get either access to talent or specific problems that they want to solve. With Audi, we did something much more significant. So their approach to innovation and how to tackle certain things, we ran an app challenge with them. So it was a 3-month app challenge where we recruited several teams to basically build apps around the car's infotainment system. It was a combination of hardware and software. They were working with people from design background, also their R&D people. A very interesting initiative. And trying to think about, you know, infotainment system, what you can integrate into it to become a much more comprehensive experience, not only from the way you use it, but the way that the infotainment system, you know, basically collects information on you, your habits, what you're doing, how it translates to everything from the car experience. So it was a very, uh-huh. very interesting approach to it. This is just one example. We were also working with Facebook. We've approached XLab, and they said, we really want to become involved, you know, with what you're doing. They wanted to come more from an educational perspective for obvious reasons, just because they're not currently active in mainland China. But we ran a semester-long course with them on entrepreneurship, and trying to really articulate insights from what they've done in Silicon Valley and how you basically build successful startups. And we brought a bunch of their senior executives out, you know, to China throughout a semester-long process, where we had our own mentors work with students to help them really apply some of the teachings, you know, and some of the insights that people shared with them. And we actually finished that course with a case competition that Facebook mm-hmm. held. And so it was really interesting, you know, approach, whether it's much more pragmatic kind of project-based or whether we're targeting education on the broader scope. We try to attack innovation entrepreneurship from multiple perspectives at XHub.
Yep. No, excellent. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg, of course, famously did his, you know, speaks Chinese and did a speech in Chinese in China and all that
yes.
a few years back.
So. Well, he came actually recently. We had another. So he sits on the board of the International Advisory Board for the School of Economics and Management of Tsinghua, and XLab is affiliated with the school. So he actually came, and we had another big event with him recently in late October. Excellent. Where the advisory board congregated. Yeah, so it was the second time already. Excellent. Also had Mr. Satya Nadella for Microsoft come. So a lot of interesting people coming along our way.
Excellent. Tal, thanks very much. You've given us some great insights about the ecosystem in China, and also comparing it to your background with Israel. And what do you do now to relax and your interests outside of the China tech space?
So it'll be funny, but I like to bake, so I like to make things with my hands, you know, and so my role is so intellectual most of the time that I like to do things with my hands, so I bake. I make really nice stuff, especially breads.
Very good, very good. Well, I like my cooking. I think when I was out with you in Beijing a few weeks back, I shared with you some of the videos that my daughter has done.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
really into baking and that as well, so hopefully you can inspire and she can inspire you. She's 11, but she loves her baking and that as well.
So kindred spirits, yeah, for sure.
Thanks so much, Telfi.